Now into Joseph's prison cell were flung two very frightened men.
We don't think that we will ever see the light of day again. Hey, Joseph, help us if you can. We've had dreams that we don't understand.
Both men were servants of Pharaoh the king, both in the doghouse for doing their thing. One was a baker, a cook in his prime. One was a butler, the Jeeves of his time.
Tell me of your dreams, my friends, and I will tell you what they show. Though I cannot guarantee to get it right, I'll have a go.
First the butler, trembling to the floor, nervously he spoke of what he saw.
There I was standing in front of a vine. I picked some grapes and I crushed them to wine. I gave them to Pharaoh, who drank from my cup. I tried to interpret, but I had to give up.
You will soon be free, my friend, so do not worry anymore. The king will let you out of here. You'll buttle as you did before.
Next, the baker rose to tell his dream, hoping it would have a similar theme.
There I was standing with baskets of bread. High in the sky, I saw birds overhead, who flew to my baskets and ate every slice. Give me the message, like is would be nice.
Sad to say, your dream is not the kind of dream I'd like to get. Pharaoh has it in for you, your execution date is set. Don't rely on all I said I saw. It's just that I have not been wrong before.
So he left Joseph in the prison, taking charge of the running of the jail, but still himself a prisoner, falsely accused and with nowhere to go. God had given him more gifts than just being able to interpret dreams. He seemed to be pretty good at administration too. The gift of administration doesn't seem that exciting, does it? And yet that's the gift that Joseph had used so effectively in the house of Potiphar and now in running the prison. But the gift he really enjoyed, his ability to tell us the meaning of dreams, was not being used. Joseph was being made to wait. That is, until Pharaoh's butler, or his cupbearers, our Bible says, and baker came along feeling sad because of their dreams. The news for the butler was good. He gets to go back to the palace and live for another day. The news for the baker was bad. Despite his delicious bread, he gets to go for the chop. Joseph was excited. At last he had been able to put his gift for interpreting dreams into practice. He acknowledges that it was a gift from God. He says so in verse 8, where he says that interpretations belong to God. And he has the confidence to tell it how it is to the butler and the baker. Both the good news to the butler and the bad news to the baker. He didn't pull any punches or hedge his bets. He said, in 3 days' time, both these dreams will come to pass, just as I have said. So is this the time when Joseph's gift shall finally be recognized for the divine gift that it is? Has he learned to give God all of the glory? Is all the trouble he caused to his family, upsetting his brothers and his father by his extravagant dreams and their interpretation all the way back there in Canaan, about to be vindicated? Does he say to the cupbearer, "Don't thank me, thank God. The interpretation belongs to him. Now, remember the God of Abraham and Jacob when you get back to the palace." Well, no. Turns out that despite Joseph's exemplary behaviour in the house of Potiphar and his patient rebuilding of his reputation inside the prison walls, Joseph was still in the school of preparation that God had enrolled him in. Why do I say that? Because Joseph was still desperate to be vindicated. After giving the cupbearer the good news, he then says in verse 14, "But when all goes well with you, remember me," he says. No mention of God here. "Remember me with kindness." Mention who? "Me," to Pharaoh. "And get me out of this prison." Why? "Because I was forcefully carried off from the land of the Hebrews. And even here I have done nothing to deserve being put in a dungeon." It's that old self-righteous, desperately looking for vindication thing again. Not only is he giving the butler a nudge to remember him, he's trying to nudge the arm of God too. We see the result in verse 23. Pharaoh's chief cupbearer, once installed safely back at the king's side, forgot all about Joseph. He forgot him. And Joseph languished in jail for another 2 years before he was even given another chance to prove himself. It's a lesson for us all, isn't it? God values humility in his children. As we said last week, that means God needs to be big and daily made bigger, and whilst we know that we are small before him. As Peter writes in 1 Peter 5 verses 5 to 6, initially quoting Proverbs 3, "God opposes the proud but shows favour to the humble. Humble yourselves therefore," says Peter, "under God's mighty hand, that he may lift you up in due time." It makes sense, doesn't it? If there is a God who made us, then he should be big in our lives. Our job is to be humble before him. And how hard that is. You see, God was a doer, he was a creator, he made the universe, the world, and everything in it. Not surprising then that human beings made in his image are also doers. And there is nothing we like more in our rebellious state than to do things to try and prove our own worth, to vindicate ourselves, our gifts, our way of thinking. It's how society works. We spend our lives trying to prove our, or better, our place in the hierarchy. We try to lift ourselves up, make ourselves big, and our achievements shine before men so that we receive our vindication sooner rather than later. That's what Joseph was still trying to do, and what we do all the time too. And God says, "Humble yourselves, therefore, under my mighty hand, that I may lift you up in due time." But we find that so hard. We wait until we come to the end of our strength. We work hard to display all our natural resources first. And only then, when they fail, do we even think of God. We think God has forgotten us or is too busy to deal with the likes of us. So we take matters into our own hands, just as Joseph did, when he urged the cupbearer to remember him before Pharaoh. Well, perhaps you find yourselves in a dungeon right now, a dungeon of uncertainty or indecision. Perhaps you're dissatisfied with the direction that your life has taken so far, or that God's gifts in you aren't being used as you would like. Perhaps you feel as though God has lost sight of you in your prison and forgotten all about you. Well, you have two options. You can strive to justify yourself by more effort and activity, or you can open your hearts, admit your humility before God, commit all you have to him, and allow him to show you the way to go. He does see you. He hasn't forgotten you. And he has good works for you to do for his glory. But sometimes you just have to learn to wait for his timing, or wait until we are humble enough to realise that our goals and desires need to be moulded to God's plans rather than our own. And so we have to be open to him and let him show that us when and how. To do that, we need to pray and to trust completely and utterly in him. In these lockdown days, it's been interesting to see a return to people in public life saying things like, "Well, our prayers are with the relatives of those in intensive care." Whilst for the last few years, the phrase has been more, "our thoughts are with them." But as Christians, we can sometimes be guilty of doing a lot more thinking than praying. So I wonder whether you are thoughting or praying about your future and your usefulness in God's kingdom. Praying shows that we are really dependent on God's plans and His timing rather than our own. That's what Joseph had to learn. And we also have to learn to be humble before God and to let Him lift us up when the time is right. God values humility in His children far more than our thoughts and our efforts. So 2 years later, when God's timing has arrived, Pharaoh has a dream. A dream about seven fat cows and seven ugly thin cows. Then he had another dream about seven healthy ears of corn, followed by seven thin, sun-scorched ears of corn. And verse 8 tells us that Pharaoh is left feeling very troubled. So he calls on the magicians and wise men of Egypt, but he remains feeling troubled because none of them can interpret the dreams for them. It is then and only then that his cupbearer says, "Ah, now that I come to think of it, I think I might know a man who can help." So Joseph gets another chance to show off his amazing, incredible gift of interpreting dreams, right? No, because this time, the first thing he says to Pharaoh in verse 16 is, "I can't do what you ask, but God can. God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires." And in verse 25, after Pharaoh had told Joseph both dreams, Joseph tells Pharaoh with all certainty that God has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do. And again in verse 28, after giving his interpretation of the seven cows and 7 ears of corn, Joseph says to Pharaoh, "God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do." And again in verse 32, after explaining that both dreams refer to seven abundant harvests to be followed by 7 years of famine, Joseph explains that the reasons the dream was given to Pharaoh in two forms is that the matter has been firmly decided by God, and God will do it soon. Not only was Joseph now 100% clear about giving the glory, honour and praise to God for the gift that he had been given, his certainty that God was behind this interpretation also gave him the confidence to go beyond what the king had asked and to give to the king of Egypt an application for his dreams. So God had shown Joseph what needed to be done next. And you see here that Joseph's two gifts are coming together. And so in verse 23, he suggests to Pharaoh that we should look for a discerning and wise man and put him in charge of the land of Egypt. And that during the 7 years of abundance, they should collect a fifth of all the produce. And then in the 7 years of famine, the food could be used to keep the people from starvation. And also that the country may not be ruined by the famine. And there we see, with absolute clarity, the twin concerns of the moment, the public health crisis and the economic crisis. Oh, to have Joseph in charge of the country right now. Unfortunately, he's already been employed. Pharaoh has snapped him up and made him his number one advisor, the governor of all Egypt. So you see, here's a vindication that Joseph hadn't been expecting. He was hoping to return to Canaan and somehow get the upper hand over his brothers. What he got was power over all Egypt and the trust of a king. Joseph had used his gift not to help himself or even to help Pharaoh and his subjects, but to glorify God, who was the gift giver. And what we see right at the end of chapter 41 and verse 57, when the 7 years of abundance and the 7 years of famine had passed, is that all the world came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph because the famine was severe everywhere. So all along, you see, Joseph's actions have been part of God's plan to keep his promise to Abraham. One of Abraham's direct descendants was already being a blessing to the nations. God had kept his promise through a newly humbled and prepared Joseph. But not only that, this was also the beginning of a new life for Joseph, a happy life. At 30 years old, he suddenly has a role, recognition, a wife and children. His firstborn is called Manasseh because it reminds him that he has forgotten all his previous troubles and his father's rather dysfunctional household. And his second child is called Ephraim as a recognition that God has made Joseph fruitful in his new land. A new chapter has begun. God wants us to be happy. Joseph's life up to now might have filled you with fear and trepidation. Does God really want me to go through all those trials and tribulations? Well, be encouraged, because in the end, God does want us to be happy. Happiness comes from walking in step with the Spirit. There's nothing wrong with wanting to do what we do well or to prove ourselves useful both to God and people. And that's what God enabled Joseph to do. But it didn't involve lording it over his brothers, not yet anyway. He would just have to settle for being the most powerful man in Egypt instead. You see, God may well have something in mind for us far greater than the thing we most desired to start with. His excitement about seeing sheaves of corn bowing down fed his ego. But being governor of Egypt fed the Egyptian people, fed people from other nations, and most importantly, kept his father's family alive once famine had driven them out of Canaan. What's more, he was no longer the falsely accused sex pest known only to Potiphar's family. Pharaoh himself was declaring him to be the most discerning and wise man in the kingdom in verse 39. Quite a change, isn't it? He hadn't sought out this privilege. He hadn't planned this vindication. He hadn't engineered it for himself. It was God's work at God's time, and it made Joseph happy. Joseph had suffered a lot to get this far, but his vindication was better than he could ever have imagined. That is always true in the Christian life, because even if we're not vindicated here and now, the promise of heaven is so much better than we can ever imagine. Without the cross in our lives, there is no crown. God values his children's humility more than their efforts, so humble yourselves, therefore, under God's mighty hand, that he may lift you up in due time. So we've looked at events from Joseph's point of view. After the next song, we're going to look at the same events from the Egyptians' point of view.